This Focus with Paul W. Smith podcast is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions. Visit victors.com, experts in home solutions.
And I know it's an extra special day here at the Detroit Economic Club luncheon at the Motor City Casino by the number of WJR people who are here. That means our first guest is a really big deal. We've got our team, the team, Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski, Dave Rieger, Tony Butler, Ann Thomas, Ava DeMangia, and Steve Finitieri, the Grand Poobah, was here. Oh, there he is. Steve Finitieri, the Grand Poobah, all here, not for me, Jim, but for Jim Fitterling, the man who is the star of today's meeting here at the Detroit Economic Club, the CEO of Dow. Great. Guest of honor, again, the big guest, the big kahuna.
Great to see you. You look fantastic. Well, great to see Ann as well, and congratulations on your promotion.
Isn't that fantastic? Great? Thank you for listening and hearing all those things, and thank you for always being supportive, the Paul W. Smith Golf Classic and all the things we do at WJR, and we certainly want to support you and Dow as the chair and chief executive officer. And I'm happy to say a proud graduate of U of M. But your U of M is University of Missouri.
Missouri,
which
right.
is okay in Columbia. And I guess I had to be reminded that you have been at Dow since about 2 weeks after you graduated college.
That's right. I left college and I went home and packed up and I moved to Midland. And so that was 40 years ago.
40 years with Dow, now at the top, with your bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering. And I said this the other day, and I want to say it with you here. What you have done for Midland, what you have done for Michigan, and what you've done for industry is really incredible. And I salute you for that, Jim. And this goes back to when we talked about your advanced nuclear reactor project in Texas, right?
Right.
How's that going?
Actually, it's going well. We're working with X Energy to build a small modular reactor, different technology than you would see in the big power plant technology, the light water reactors. But this small modular reactor allows us to do at a scale where we can put 480 megawatt reactors at our site in Seadrift, Texas, and convert all the power and steam to zero carbon emissions. For industry to decarbonize, it's going to be one of the key technologies. And I would also say for AI and the growth in AI and data centers and the electricity needs there, small modular nuclear is going to play a key role.
This is a very big deal. And the business people listening in our on-air audience, as well as the people that are here for the Economic Club, are going to understand how this small modular reactor circumstance and situation that you're advancing, trying out, could be a game changer across the board.
It's an inherently safe technology. It is. It only takes about 3 acres on a 20-acre site to site 4 of those 80 megawatt reactors. It's a walk-away safe technology. It uses a different form of fuel. So if you lost power, like say the incident in Fukushima, Japan, that happened, where they lost utilities and power and they couldn't put the fuel rods in on the plant. That doesn't exist with this technology. If you lost power, you walk away from the plant. The reaction doesn't run away. It extinguishes on itself. Hmm. It's walk away safe. And in order to do 320 megawatts of power for our site, if that was to be solar, it would be thousands and thousands of acres of solar panels to do the same thing that we can do on 3 acres. For industry, who has really concentrated needs for 24/7 reliability, safety, and on-time power, and if you add our needs, the addition of steam, this is a no-brainer to look at this.
Well, it's amazing. When you first told me about it, I was taken with how, of all the things we think Dow is involved with, that one was not one of those things, but everything that you're doing is great, and What will you be doing today? Will you talk about this today, or will you? What else about the energy transition and all that's going on?
Well, we'll talk about the energy transition because that really underpins America's competitiveness. Energy competitiveness is the base of America's competitiveness. So if we want to bring manufacturing back to America, we're going to have the energy that we need. If we want to decarbonize the industry that we have to move through the energy transition. And if we want to support AI, which is rapidly growing, and all the data centers that are going to come with that technology, we are creating another energy-intensive industry that could be bigger than the petrochemical industry, and we have to have the electricity to support that. And today, you can't do that with renewables. Renewables are great, and they have a place, but they won't be able to support a 24/7 operation like a data center or a whole petrochemical plant or a steel mill or something else. You have to have 24/7 reliability.
You have an overabundance of good news to share at the Dow Investor Day coming up May 16th.
We do. We're going to cover, since we spun out, we had a pretty long list of items that we wanted to complete, and we did a fantastic job. And we've come out of the pandemic and this last 5 years since spin in the best shape that we've ever been in. And we're moving into a growth phase and an investment phase, and it's a good time to get in front of the investors, help them understand how that creates value for them long term, what Dow is going to look like 5 years, 10 years down the road. And they're all looking for, obviously, they're looking at, what the near-term economy is going to be like. But we have to give them a long-term plan that we have to live to as well. Our investments are decades-long investments. They're not this year's investment, next year's investment. They are taking positions that we know are going to be there for decades, like our plant in Alberta, Canada, which is the world's first net zero ethylene and plastics facility. It's the largest hydrogen carbon capture project to FID anywhere in the world, and it's under construction right now.
Well, you have a goal. You've expressed it before. We're with Jim Fitterling, who is the chairman and CEO of Dow. Your goal is maximizing long-term value for shareholders. You did 2023 net sales of $45 billion, about 36,000 employees, 98 manufacturing sites, and 31 countries in which Dow manufactures products. A pretty glowing report, Mr. Fitterling, under your guidance.
It's going through probably the toughest part of the economic cycle for us, and to come through it the way we did, I think, is fantastic. And to come through the pandemic the way we did, just hats off to our team, because it took a whole team effort, and we've got a very focused, committed, dedicated team, and proud to be part of the great state of Michigan, and proud that we call this our home.
Well, and we're very happy you call this your home as well. And by the way, with all the other things that you are doing business-wise and otherwise, you do great things for Midland, for the great state of Michigan, and overall now for the game of golf, as you were the recipient of the Commissioner's Award for the 2023 Rolex LPGA Awards. That honors a person or organization that has contributed uniquely to the LPGA and its members, furthering the cause of women's golf and possessing the character and standards of the highest order, which certainly is you, Jim. And you continue with the golf tournament under a brand new name now, the Dow Championship. Tell us about that.
Yeah, with the Dow Championship, we're in our second five-year stint here with the LPGA, and things are going well. We moved to June this year. We go June 27th through the 30th, which is a Thursday through Sunday. Historically, we've been Wednesday through Saturday, but that move is great. We've increased the purse to $3 million. It should be a full field. We've got more than 270 local partners, community sponsors, businesses that help us pull this off. It's a team event, so two-person, foursomes and four-ball, alternate days, and lots of activities for the family. The STEM Center is a huge hit for the families. The interactions with the players, come on up to Midland. You'll have a great time, and you'll make a contribution to a great cause. We've been able to give more than $2 million to local nonprofits since 2019, and we'll be on that pace again this year.
No doubt. And all of this happening at the fine Midland Country Club, and WJR will be there. I can promise you that. I don't know if it'll be me or who it will be, but I promise you, because Ann Thomas told me just moments ago when I asked, We will be there.
I will be there to be with you and welcome you with bells on. We'll look forward to seeing you.
I'm sure they need you up on the stage. You are the featured speaker, and I know that these people are in for a great conversation with Jim Fitterling. He is the chairman and CEO of Dow, and he's a good friend, and it's nice to see you, and I'm so glad things are going so well.
Great to see you. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, sir. We continue from the Detroit Economic Club luncheon at the Motor City Casino. Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. I just pointed out, Kim just sent me a note, and it goes nicely with a story I wanted to pass along anyway. Today, I didn't realize this, the 100 days before the opening ceremonies. So that's a big deal. You know, we always keep track. Remember, I was there at the White House on the 100th day of Bill Clinton in office as president. So 100 means something to a lot of people. 100 days to the opening ceremonies in Paris, which leads me to the story today. Ed Bastian, all-around good guy, and the head of Delta Airlines, the official airline of the Paul W. Smith Show, and I think all of WJR, Ed Bastian was on the Today Show. And maybe that's what he was doing, was announcing the 100 days to the opening. But what happened was a woman, you know, when they're outside and the crowd is there and people bring signs, a woman held up a sign and said it was her birthday. So Ed Bastian walked over to her and gave her the best birthday present that she wasn't expecting. He gave her 2 first-class tickets to Paris and tickets to the Olympics.
Hopefully she can get off on work by time.
Next time I'm in New York, I'm going to be sure to go to the Today Show and
we'll
hang out.
For you.
Please do. Ed Bastian, all-around good guy. And speaking of all-around good guys, we've got one sitting here with us. Kevin Voigt, the Michigan managing partner of KPMG Global here at the luncheon for the Detroit Economic Club. And we're not going to keep you long because I know you want to get in there and hear what Jim Fitterling has to say and the other speakers as well. Nice to see you, Kevin.
It's great to be with you, Paul.
And you guys do an annual survey. And you did it again, of over 400 CEOs. Tell us about the survey and tell us about some of the things you found.
Happy to do so, Paul. So, and I'll give you this context. We do this every year. And what we're noticing now is something we're calling sort of compound volatility that our CEOs are facing. Balancing near-term risks, geopolitical and cyber as an example. And a couple of years ago, it was the pandemic and then the Great Recession and the chip shortage, right? All these near-term risks and balancing against the long-term sort of structural changes in the U.S. economy, including inflation. It's pretty sticky, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah.
Climate, tax, supply chains, and really with a particular focus on the tight labor markets and the demographic challenges we have in the U.S. as it relates to those. And by the way, we don't exactly have an accommodating immigration policy, right? So it's a challenge for our companies and our CEOs to deal with. So let me point out a couple things.
Please.
From the survey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in that, just given that compound volatility they're facing, one surprising fact is 87% of our CEOs were very confident in U.S. economic growth over the near term. 78% of them are very confident over their own company's growth over the next couple years. Okay, so they're very confident. The U.S. economy is terrific. It's the envy of the world. We have our challenges for sure, but it's the envy of the world. A couple things, though. You know, almost half of our CEOs said they would wait until 2025 to do any significant capital spend or merger and acquisition.
Why? Do they give a reason why?
They do. So with regard to M&A, so we have high financing costs these days, right? The multiples, the expectations on valuation multiples are still elevated. And then they point to that election as a fulcrum as well in terms of navigating that. What the election is all about, right, is eliminating at least some of the uncertainty. And I think our CEOs, they don't particularly have a horse in the race, as it were, right, whether it's the Congress, the Senate, or the presidential election. They just want certainty, Paul W.
Yeah, and they have to get along with everybody. So, it doesn't behoove you to say, I got a horse in this race, and here's who I want, because you got a long time to live with the other guy if he wins.
You sure do. Another really fascinating discovery that we had in the survey, Paul W., is this. Spending on generative AI. Now, I talked about the M&A markets. I talked about major capital spend being sort of paused, as it were. But 97% of our CEOs said they will spend more or the same that they did the prior year. And let me attach some numbers to that. nearly half of our participants said they're going to spend $100 million or more on generative AI again this year.
Wow.
25% are going to spend between $100 and $250, and another 25% over $250 million on generative AI.
There's a lot of opportunity there. We're talking with Kevin Voigt, Michigan Managing Partner, KPMG Global. There's a lot of opportunity there. I just don't know what it is.
Sure. Well, how about we talk about a couple use cases as an example.
Right.
Some of the early adopters are in the finance and the IT area, Paul W. And if you think about that labor shortage that we're facing that we mentioned early on, you know, a lot of those are in the high-tech space, right? And how are we going to get these software engineers? Here in Detroit, right, the mobility capital of the world, you know, cars are it's not about bending metal anymore, right? It's about software and autonomy and all that stuff that goes with regard to automobiles these days. So you need software engineers. So how can you leverage that, right? Using generative AI, we can leverage the talent that we have, right? And our CEOs are telling this, hey, that programming that might take, let's say, 8 hours of coding to take in a normal setting, if they can leverage generative AI, maybe they can reduce that to 2 hours or 1 hour, right?
It's astonishing.
It's the multiplier effect,
yeah.
Right? And then in finance, use it for financial planning and predictive models, you know, you can even use it to spot fraud. I mean, you know, cybersecurity is a significant issue, as you well know.
I can't help but worry, Kevin, about the loss of jobs, because there are going to be a lot of them. And I don't want to go down that road right now, but you have something.
Well, one interesting fact, and I agree with you, common sense might indicate that, hey, we're going to face into some job losses. 72% of our CEOs anticipate adding headcount over the near term.
Wow.
So they're what they view this as a tool to address some of those labor challenges and to leverage their existing pool of talent, but they need more talent.
Interesting. Yeah, because I heard a great line. Maybe it's just a great line. That humans had no natural predators until we invented AI.
Not a bad line. I will tell you this though, people and not machines will ultimately determine the return on investments for generative AI. The workforce adoption will ultimately drive success.
Excellent. Hey, I just want to say, because this is so very important, Kevin Voigt is, during the day, Michigan Managing Partner, KPMG Global. And who's kidding who? All the time he's got that job going on. But he also helps out with the Special Olympics, a recent past board chair, now on the executive committee. A lot of people recognize the name, the Special Olympics, but share how the Special Olympics impacts our region.
Oh, Paul W., in tremendous ways. Let me put it in the context of our motto, let me win, but if I cannot win, let me be brave in the attempt. This is about a population of nearly 20,000 folks in the state of Michigan who participate, who have intellectual challenges, intellectual disabilities, who participate in sports and wellness programming, all at no cost to them or their families, Paul W. So Special Olympics Michigan is doing tremendous things. Here in Detroit, by the way, 90 what we call unified champion schools. These are schools where sports programming is designed for both the intellectually disabled as well as their champion partners. So together, working together on teams, and it builds, it breaks down barriers, it establishes friendships, ending bullying. It's terrific. And by the way, there's the state games are coming up, Paul W. The state games for Special Olympics, May 30th through June 1st at Central Michigan University. 500 athletes here from the Detroit area participating. And a big shout out to Michelle Osborne and Sue Campbell, who are really generating a lot of interest here locally for those athletes.
Hey, listen, when we get closer, I don't want you to be a stranger anyway, because it's been too long. So, Kevin, you come back when we get closer. Let's give another push. This big conversation was about your annual survey at KPMG. We'll still talk about KPMG, obviously, but we'll also talk about the
May 30th through June 1st.
May 30th through June 1st up at Central Michigan University.
Right.
We'll talk about that, too, if you'll come back.
Certainly will. Thanks, Paul W.
We'll look forward to it. Michigan Managing Partner, KPMG Global, Kevin Voigt, as we continue in Focus on WJR. It's great to be here to see old friends and new friends, to say hello. We're really honored to be here, the only broadcast facility that's been asked to be here. with the Detroit Economic Club luncheons. This one today at the Motor City Casino, and as Mr. Announcer just said, with an old friend and an all-around great guy, 40 years with Dow, right out of college, and he's chairman and CEO, Jim Fitterling, and he's done a great job with the company and with Midland, and the golf championship now, the Dow championship, all kinds of good things going on. But there's another guy who's an all-around good guy who used to be a formidable foe in the radio business. His name is Rich Homburg, president and CEO now for many years of Detroit Public Television, and one of your former employees, and I always wanted to work for you, Rich, never had a chance, but Marie Osborne is sitting next to me, and when she heard I was having you on, she goes, oh, is he here? And I said, no, he's on the phone. She said, I loved him. He was great to the talent. So that's a nice thing to hear, huh, Rich?
Well, Marie Osborne, the two of you are, you know, a couple of the nicer people I've ever known. So, and now, are we former colleagues or former competitors? Or what?
Competitors.
I guess
we're
now,
former competitors.
How about always friends? Always friends.
Always. We've always been friends. I think we've each respected each other. And I just said before we came on that Rich was very good for radio because you were such a formidable competitor. It made everybody be on their toes and do a better job.
Can I tell your audience a little Paul W. Smith story, a little backstory?
Uh-oh. I guess. So, I need this job, though, Rich. So, remember, I need this
job. No, it's too much fun, because you know pretty much what I'm going to say. I grew up in Philadelphia, went to Temple University, left to go to New York, and arrives Paul W. Smith to host a major show on WWDB. I moved to New York to work for WMCA, a wonderful, legendary talk station in New York. Our buddy, Mark Mason, was the program director.
Oh,
worked
my.
There for a couple years. Then I moved to Wins, the all-news station. Life goes on. Mason says to me, I hired a morning guy. He's going to be the guy that someday replaces J.P. McCarthy. His name is Paul W. Smith. So I worked in the city that you came into after I left, and it's at a station in New York that I worked at that after I left, you came in and did mornings there. Mason said to me, this guy's great. I'll never forget Mark telling me that. And then I about to get hired to go to KDK in Pittsburgh, but at the last minute, they said, we got a better way to go. There's another station to WWJ. And you're my competition in this city. So you and I have been stalking each other
for
the better part of maybe 30 years, if you will.
That's a great story. I'm glad you reminded me. And yes, I worked in Philadelphia at an FM talk station, WWDB. Yep. Yes, I worked in New York for Mark Mason at WABC and then WMCA. And you don't know
you
this.
You were WABC first. I forgot that. That's
right. Yep. And you don't know this. That I was approached by KDKA to go work for them. And I said, I never even thought about going there, so I don't think I'm going to. So we have so many connections.
That's where I met the Dish.
The Dish.
That's where I met my lovely wife, Tracy.
Tracy is lovely. And she
We've always respected each other, and occasionally it's like, Rich, you're acting a little too much like a competitor today.
Listen, I would go to work for you in a minute I remember in the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building, and I was talking to Marie about this, we always pitched in to help you with fundraisers, and we would literally walk across the back alley behind the Fisher Building and walk into your building. And I'm happy to say you're coming back to the heart of Detroit.
I'll be in the neighborhood. We'll be in the neighborhood quickly. We are truly, truly excited. A decade or more is worth the work and building the station in direction and really embracing Detroit like never before. We had a fabulous building, but what we discovered was it was 15 miles in the wrong direction. So we started looking for an opportunity. Our incredible CFO, Alette Boyd, our great chief engineer, Brian Den, we came close on a couple of different pieces of land and properties, and we had a call from someone who said, you've got to go see the Milwaukee Junction, the Milwaukee Junction neighborhood.
You've
got to go
Street.
See Paquette, 234 Paquette. And our CFO drove up, and she literally calls and says, I got the spot. What's going on around the Fisher Building is just extraordinary. And you've been there the whole time. But what Henry Ford and Michigan State are doing and just had the build out of the neighborhood, there's such great energy in our town and such great energy in that neighborhood. So we've been in three different locations for a long time. We built a bureau at the Mary Grove Conservancy. WRCJ is in the Detroit School of Arts, and obviously we had a building in Wixom, bringing it all together and hopefully doubling down on our commitment to Detroit. I'm very excited about it. I announced that, and I'm trying to get used to this, Paul. Detroit PBS. You spend
Instead of Detroit Public TV, you now are Detroit PBS. What went into the name change?
Well, we've had a lot, and we've been DPTV and Detroit Public TV and Detroit Public Television and Channel 56. And on and on. And at the same time, we operate five different 24/7 television channels, and we're on umpteen websites and platforms. And so we looked at our brand and our name, and nothing more important. You know about TMICIA, the most important city in America, the one we live in. So Detroit, what says trust? What says depth? What says important content than PBS? So we did a lot of research and came to, okay, we now have one and only one name, Detroit PBS. And I'm trying to, because habits die
hard. It's hard.
Yeah,
it'd be like if we changed our call letters, which I hope we never do, but it's very hard when you're used to saying Detroit Public TV. Now Detroit PBS, and you are high above and not getting in the dirt with the whole thing about NPR suspending a senior business editor who, frankly, did what he shouldn't have done. He penned a scathing online essay claiming the radio network had lost America's trust. That may or may not be true. That's not the point. As an employee, he should have taken that internally and dealt with it rather than opening it up to the public. And so that's just my two cents worth.
Not my argument. No, matter of fact, we have a great relationship with PBS. Done a lot of work with Ken Burns, a lot of work with Henry Louis Gates. I love the PBS NewsHour, but where the real need is, and I think you'll agree, is around local, around really embracing the community, around bringing together the community. How do we better understand each other? How do we get our kids ready for life? How do we play the role that we're supposed to play? And yeah. And so that's the assignment. I joke with people, we're in the ought to be business. We're the public broadcasters. You guys ought to do this and that. So we take that very seriously, and we try to understand how you bring this community together. And it's the best, more fun doing this job than any job I've done.
Oh, that's excellent. Detroit Public TV and the right guy at the right time for years now, Rich Homburg, president and CEO. I'm glad that we're going to have you in the neighborhood. That means we're going to see you more. And best to you, Rich, and best to your lovely Tracy.
Oh, my goodness. And Marie, I hope you're doing great. We'll talk soon.
Oh, Rich,
thanks, guys.
You are my hero. So glad that you'll be right in the neighborhood.
Coffee soon.
And you have an
I will.
And you have an expense account, so you can take us to lunch. So that's even better. All right, Rich, thanks so much.
All the best to you. Thank you.
All the best to you. Congratulations. Coming right back into the city of Detroit, Rich Homburg, president and CEO of what they're now going to be calling Detroit Public TV. All good news, and we try to accentuate the positive. Relentless positive radio with Focus and Paul W. Smith. And Marie Osborne's here for a reason. That's coming up next. I mentioned Marie. Well, listen, if you've ever been to a big event that is serving food, you likely have noticed that a lot of it goes to waste. With the NFL draft expected to draw 600, I don't know how many, hundreds of thousands of people to Detroit for various events, there'll be more than enough food to go around. But what happens to that food that's not eaten? Leave it to our WJR senior news analyst, Marie Osborne, here with the story of one organization that's coming to the food rescue, Marie.
Hi, Paul. So Chad Techner is the founder and CEO of Metro Detroit Food Rescue. Job one for the draft, he says, gather up all the food that won't be eaten and get it into the hands of hungry Detroiters. And it's a much bigger problem than you may think.
In this country, we waste 40% of the food that is destined for people to eat. And at the same point, one in five kids don't have enough food, as well as millions and millions of Americans overall.
Metro Food Rescue rescues food from more than 50 locations in any given week and then across the Metro Detroit area.
What we are doing with the NFL draft and what we do in general is we find high quality, delicious food that is made in excess because of lots of reasons, and we take it to those who need it.
And Metro Food Rescue will deliver the draft food to four partner organizations within hours of picking up the food. Techner says they plan to pick it up, deliver it between 20, and they're going to be delivering between 25 and 35,000 meals during the draft. He says there's no judgment here. Caterers and restaurants do their best to prepare the right amount of food. Sometimes, though, leftovers can't be avoided.
They make too much for one reason or another. I mean, one time they had 100 less people show up an event than they were expecting. And so they had 100 people's worth of food that would otherwise go to waste if we didn't go.
So if you'd like to help Detroit Food Rescue, they could use it. They're looking for volunteers to assist in gathering the food from the vendors and then dropping it off at partner organizations. And in fact, they've already started this because there's events that are already underway. You can get all the details at MetroFoodRescue.com, MetroFoodRescue.com. There's a tab there, the NFL draft tab. All you have to do is click on that, Paul, or you can go to WJR.com.
Our own friend and manager of all sales for all of Cumulus, Jeff Marcero, just received an award for fighting hunger. And we have worked with so many different people with our Hunger Free in the D, Cars and Cigars, Tom Chalani, Dario Bergamo, all these other people. There are a lot of people doing what they can, and I'm thrilled to hear of MetroFoodRescue.com to try to wipe away this problem without pointing fingers at anyone, that 40% of the food is wasted when we see starving children. And those of us who've been on the Salvation Army Bed and Bread Club truck and the people who so depend on the food that they're handing out, it's overwhelming. But I think that your guest here has the right idea. Don't point fingers. Don't say whatever. People are not trying to waste food. But let's say you're called in to cater a certain event. The last thing you want to do is have your event go on, and because a few extra people showed up that no one was expecting, they say, hey, we're out of food. You'd be out of business.
No, that's exactly. He talked a lot about that, about how a lot of these chefs, you know, they have to have more than enough food or else they, you know, their reputation is at stake. Not a judgment here that they just take that extra food. And again, they're looking at 25 to 35,000 meals during our NFL draft period that they plan to deliver to these four partner organizations who really need it. And they'll get it within, oh, just a few hours. And they're going to have and by the way, the food's really great. So
you know what the food is already? You mean the food that's going to be for the...
Because a lot of these venues serve very high-end food.
Yeah, so. And I heard that the food is better at Tiger games, too. Anybody? Yeah, okay. So, of course, Dave Rieger. Dave Rieger's reaction was very slow and deliberate. He gave me the food is better than ever at Tiger Stadium. Yeah, well, I haven't been there yet, so I'm looking forward to that. Anything else, Riri, that we need to know that you're working on today? I know they have you working in a million directions. You're here with us at this fabulous event, the Detroit Economic Club Luncheon at the Motor City Casino. What else do you have to do?
Well, today I'm going to be actually doing a true crime podcast, and I'll tell you more about that in the few days to come. So this
Oh,
is
today for, you're taping it. It's
yeah,
not it's not for broadcast
we're
yet.
We're going to be taping it with an organization, and I'll let you know, and we'll post it on our website as well.
Will McGruff be there to take a bite out of crime?
One can only hope, right? One can only hope.
He's still alive, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And coming up in this next week, I'll be doing more of these sidebar stories. There's so much going on with the draft, but so many things behind the scenes and things that are happening that people may not know about. Everybody thinks about the draft, but there's a lot of stuff happening like this behind the scenes, and we're going to be bringing those stories to you.
Well, it's all next week. We've been waiting a long time for this. We want you to go. We'll tell you all about it. We've told you a million times about how you get your credentials. Don't pay anybody for anything because it's all free, but you do have to go to the NFL and get online at least some credentials to be able to participate in all the other activities. But we'll remind you again about that as we have several times already. As we continue this special broadcast, we're here at the Motor City Casino. We're thrilled that Steve Gregorian and the Detroit Economic Club has invited us to yet another great function, this one featuring the one and only Chairman and CEO of Dow, Jim Fitterling, as we continue. So great to be here with all of the team, the team, the team. Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski, Dave Rieger, Tony Butler, Ann Thomas, Ava DeMangia, Steve Finitari. It's the biggest part of the team. Isn't that the biggest team we've had yet?
Yeah, it's funny how that works when we're out here. They follow us like an – I thought they were your entourage.
Well, they were today. Yeah. They were today. And, you know, sadly, we're losing – Tony, don't call me Anthony Butler, although on the email he's Anthony. Like you on the email, you're Michael.
Right.
And I asked you, do you prefer Michael? And you said, no, Mike's good.
Yeah.
So anyway, and Tony, we've always called Tony Butler. Nearly 40 years he's been here, and we're going to miss you, my friend.
All right. I'll be around. I'll be around. I'm still working for you guys right now.
He's the GOAT. Yeah.
You know what? He says he'll be around, but try calling him the day after this thing.
Look, I don't blame him.
The number you have called has been changed.
Tony, how long have you been doing this, 40 years?
37.
About 37.
Yeah. And you hired a lot of us, too. A lot of us who started.
Well, a lot of you weren't born when he
Yeah. People don't know this, but Tony ran the board op department for years and years. And I'm not just saying that because he's here. He was a very, very good boss.
Oh, wow.
Well, I believe that because he's a very, very good guy.
Right, because they hear him yelling at us on remotes here. Like, really, that guy was a good boss? But like, no, he was a great boss.
No, let me tell you something. Tony doesn't yell. Ed Buderball yelled. Ed Buderball was, I'll tell you the quick story. He was the chief engineer when I was briefly at CKLW in Windsor. And somebody called me from the station and said, we need a new chief engineer. And I said, well, Ed Buderball's the best. Mm-hmm. He's the best, but I don't know if he ever wants to leave. He's a Canadian, and I don't know if he wants to leave CKLW. And they said, because I didn't understand all this, I said, well, you should call him. And he goes, no, it's better if you have him call us. This is all, you know, I didn't know how to hire and fire. And
right.
This was better for them to get a call from him than
have
them calling him.
Call my people.
Yeah. So he called, and it worked out. And I think Ed loved working for Cap Cities Communications. It was a huge broadcast company of great success. He had unlimited resources. If he said, I need this piece of equipment.
No question.
He got it.
No question.
Plus,
he crossed the border every night.
He did cross the border every day. He had to go through that. But he was so good. And I love him because he knew I had good ears. Mm-hmm. I may be hard of hearing without my headphones, but I've had headphones on for 60 years. And when he would open a new studio, and we had several of them in the years that I've been associated with the radio station, he'd come in before we'd go on the air and he'd say, put those headphones on and listen, see if you hear anything. And I would. I'd hear electronic noises. I'd hear things that shouldn't be there.
Wow.
And I love that he trusted me to find that for him.
You might have been an engineer in a past life.
Maybe I was. I did have to get my third class permit, which nobody has to get anymore.
It's funny. Those are still hanging up in the back room at WJR. I see. Yeah. That's how I figured out what Tony's middle name was. And
Wait a minute. What's his middle name?
You know what? I'll let Tony tell you if he wants to.
Okay.
We don't want people stealing his Social Security number or anything.
No.
But, you know, Tony had chances to go elsewhere, and he chose to stay here with us at WJR in Detroit. I mean, not just for us, but.
Well, I think he said specifically it was for you.
Yeah, someone had to keep an eye on me and make sure I didn't burn the place down.
And Rieger, of course, you know, you had a hallowed position for a very long time with Glenn. That was a big deal. Glenn was an island unto himself.
Oh, yeah. Hagee Island, up for sure. Yeah.
Hagee Island. Yes. He had a great business. He was a great guy, and we hated losing him. Man, we've lost a lot of people. If you stay someplace as long as I have and Tony has, a lot of people have come and gone, and a lot of really, really good people. You know, I got to say this real quick because I never knew Lee Chatfield and his wife, but I remember, and Ann would remember this, that. From what I recall, Lee Chatfield and his wife came up to us at broadcasts and were always so nice.
Yeah.
And so kind. And when I read all this stuff now that's in the news for the former Michigan House Speaker, Lee Chatfield embezzling public and private funds to support a lavish. I know you're not guilty until proven, but this is a horrible story.
Yeah, and this all started from an investigation of him being accused of sexual abuse by his sister-in-law.
Oh, yeah. And, forgot about that. Yeah.
And, you know, when Guy first started, I was working with him in the afternoon. We had Lee Chatfield on a lot. And he always seemed like a real straight shooter with a lot of integrity. And
he looked like such a clean-cut guy.
He looked younger than me. And, and that's kind of the image that he portrayed. And, like you said, innocent until proven guilty.
Well, how old are you? How old are you?
I'll be 40 in August.
Well, he is younger than you.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
He's 35.
Okay. Well, then I guess I could work at Cedar Point guessing people's ages then. But, there's certain people you hear accusations come out about them, and it's just really disappointing because – you feel like you kind of get to know them a little bit, especially if there are frequent guests on the radio station or the show that you're on, and this is one of them.
Yeah, that's a sad one. That's a tough one. But it also, you know, I've been hoodwinked before.
I know. Well,
I don't try to be, obviously. I generally like the people that I have on, whether I agree with them or don't agree with them.
Right.
But I can't agree with any of this.
Well, and that's the other thing, too. You start doubting your own self-judgment because, you know, in this business, you feel like you get a pretty good BS detector. And when people slip through that, either in this business or just, you know, just the public as an elected official, it does shake your trust.
Well, it does. I not so much in this case,
yeah,
because I really had very little to do with him.
Right.
It would be he and his wife walking up at an event and being very nice, and I thought that was very nice. But we didn't have him on all the time. We had him on before,
yeah,
because he was Speaker of the House. But anyway, you just hate to see all that sort of stuff. Let's see. What do we have here? Yeah, that's on the front page of the Detroit News. Chatfield charged with stealing political funds for personal use. AG also targets ex-State House Speaker's wife in alleged scheme. Police on an alert for a wave of crime tourist burglaries.
Again.
Oh, man, oh, man. Let's see. Political opposition to UAW organizing drive gets louder in the South, and justices question January 6th obstruction charges. The outcome of the case could influence Trump prosecution. This is, you know, you do have to draw a fine line on what you can do legally, what's freedom of speech, and what you can't do. For me, it's easy. If you start to do damage or hurting people or hurting property, you've gone beyond your freedom of anything.
Yeah.
That's my take on it.
And I think this case centers around this protester who happened to be a member of law enforcement in his community. He's trying to get off the charges of whatever happened at January 6th. He's one of the people who breached the Capitol, which a lot of those people are being prosecuted because I guess that's illegal, at least in the manner that they did that. And so he's trying to say that he was just exercising his First Amendment rights. And they're saying, no, you trespassed on federal property.
Well, I don't. That's an interesting argument. If you did, if he didn't hurt anybody, if
right,
he didn't try to hurt anybody, if he didn't break windows, if he didn't
right,
do, you know, we do own those buildings.
Right, because that's my question. I mean, people can go into the Capitol if they're visiting. I mean, they're supposed to. But, yeah.
And there are rules and there are regulations. So,
yeah,
I'll leave that all up to them. Real quick. And notice I'm looking at you, Rieger, but whoever's the biggest sports guy of the three of you
Rieger.
There, Red Wings, man, did they come back, and it was heartwarming, but they still didn't
they tried,
get in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, credit to the last few games, but that losing streak they had about maybe a month or two, month and a half ago when Dylan Larkin went down, that did them in.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we salute our Detroit Red Wings. And we hope it goes better for them next year. All righty. Mark Royce, president of General Motors, is coming up, obviously, on the GM move from the Renaissance Center to Hudson's Detroit. Be some interesting information you may not have heard yet. Coming up here with Paul W. Smith in Focus. Well, of course, the big news is that General Motors is moving, but not far, just up the street. You've heard by now that General Motors is moving from the Renaissance Center to Hudson's Detroit. To give us even more information than we already have, our good friend, the president of General Motors, Mark Royce, on the line right now. Mark, congratulations. And by the way, thanks for your 100-plus year commitment to the city of Detroit, which continues.
Well, thanks, Paul W. You know, it's a pretty exciting time. I think, you know, we all feel it. And, you know, the continued Dan Gilbert and Bedrock have just been incredible partners, not only with us, but, you know, the whole city, and bringing the whole city to life, both business and, you know, the whole community piece of what they've built. That's a big deal. And so we're just thrilled. And, you know, like you said, we've been there for a long, long time, starting in 1911, right on Woodward there, until 1923, when we relocated to the Grand, you know, the Grand Boulevard, West Grand Boulevard office of the GM building. And that remained there for, you know, until 96, when we bought the Rensen. So, you know, we've got a long history. We've got a few different places, and going back to Woodward here, and the, you know, the Hudson building is just, it feels really, really fun and good. And, you know, I think the Rensen piece of this, you know, it's an iconic piece of our skyline. We all know that and love it. But I think it's time to have a really clear look at what we did, you know, and what we're doing on that riverfront, which is world class. You know, it's been voted number one here several years in a row. So it's a very exciting time.
I think it's an extremely exciting time. And I think buying the Rensen in 96 was exactly the right thing to do. I think Matt Cullen, who steered you guys that way and took away the berm and opened up the riverfront. Everything that's happened since then has been spectacular, and you're nearly 30 years at the Renaissance Center along the Detroit River. It's only gotten much better. But realistically, the way office work is now, hybrid or call it what you will, there aren't a lot of people that are coming into an office 5 days a week. And, of course, Mark, you and I remember when we used to come to the office 7 days a week, but that's another story for another time.
That's exactly right.
and the beauty is that we keep you in Detroit, and I really am excited about what Dan and Jennifer Gilbert can do with the Renaissance Center. I mean, there's a lot of things that they can do to make it better. I think there could be some fabulous high-end housing on the river. Every major city has things like that. Maybe they can make smaller offices. Maybe they can make it an incubator. That's one of the things you mentioned to me in our conversation before coming on the air. That is having a certain area there to help entrepreneurs and others who couldn't afford that kind of real estate otherwise. Maybe upgrade the hotel. What I'm saying is, I think that there are so many possibilities that are now possible, possibilities being possible, because of the change in ownership. Does this mean that General Motors has walked away totally from any ownership in the Renaissance Center?
Well, not yet, because, you know, with what we have, I believe what you said is exactly right. The sky's the limit of what can happen on the site. And, you know, we've put, you know, over $1 billion into the site here over the last years, and the riverfront and that whole area. But, you know, Bud Denker and Roger and ourselves have brought the Grand Prix back to the, you know, the streets of Detroit. So, I mean, it's really quite an area, and I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, if you look at this ownership wise, we're going to take a year here, right, and really look at this. And I think Mayor Duggan said this yesterday as well, that, you know, we've got the right leadership looking at this. And if there's a group of people that can really redevelop this in the right way, you know, I think we have it all intact. And that's very exciting, because you know how much Dan, Jennifer, and Bedrock have done for the city. And if there's, I don't know that of the list of things that you said were possible, if there's any one thing, and that's very exciting too. It could be all of those things, right? It really could.
Right.
Which is, you know, that's truly a special opportunity. And yeah, the hybrid piece of this, you know, just to mention what it really is today, is over 80% of all companies have a hybrid like work environment, and we're one of those. And so, you know, it's time to look at that and do what's right for the business, what's right for Detroit, and what's right for, you know, the whole community. And I think this is one of those rare opportunities where it is truly a win-win-win. And so, you know, I think everybody's very excited. Our employees that are going to work there are really excited. So that's a big deal, right?
That's a big new, and I stress new, working in a building that isn't new. We have the Golden Tower, the Fisher Building, which is certainly a beautiful lobby and a beautiful building, but it isn't new. And the things you can do in a new building are massive compared to what happens in an older building. As we're speaking with Mark Royce, president of General Motors, GM, moving from the Renaissance Center to Hudson's Detroit. And when I heard this, I wondered, gee whiz, Dan just named it Hudson's Detroit, just changed the name. Do you have naming rights now in this building?
I honestly, I'm not sure that would be on the top of my list, but we do have, we do have signage and I'm not sure anything is better than Hudson's Detroit, to be honest with you. I go back to my childhood and shopping in the children's only store there. you stand there and do the announcement that we did the other day, and it's like, it's just really special. And so I think Dan has captured that with the name, which is very beautiful.
GM has entered into, from what I understand, a 15-year multi-level lease for the top office floors, as well as grabbing some of that showcase space on the street level. You can put some of those GM vehicles and community activations. That's all good.
Yeah, it's fun. If you look at that, the ground floor, I'm particularly excited about that because we're going to, I think, bring Michael Simcoe, our VP of design, is bringing sort of the modern, postmodern, mid-century modern, Saarinen and feel of, the tech center and some of his work that was done recently on our new design center. He's bringing that feel into that lobby. And if you look at what's possible in that showroom space, it's everything from an event center to an actual an event ground level space with garage doors. It's really something. So, it can really create an unbelievable environment around the building right in the center of downtown.
Was there ever any conversation of leaving the city of Detroit?
There actually was never. And, that's why when we started looking at this right in the heart of the pandemic, where, it was very tough. Like, we have basically an empty building. And we're like, okay, well, what is happening here? There's no playbook for it. But we never talked about leaving Detroit ever. But we wanted the right place and the right space. And, having been so fortunate to be able to talk to Bedrock and the Gilberts about something like Hudson's, and having the ability to influence a little bit of, the materials, the architecture, the layouts. We're right at that point right now. So, we took a tour of it yesterday and it was just fabulous, actually the day before. And it was, the floors are in, the elevators are done, the stairways and the escalators are being put in. And then the terrace and the views are there. And so now we go to town on, what does the workspace look like and how many people and what staffs. So that's yet to come.
We look forward to the, how about this, the GM wing of Hudson's Detroit. We look forward to seeing that.
I just hope it's not called the children's only area.
I'm kind of with you on that. Mark, yeah, thanks so yeah. much. Thanks to all the hardworking men and women of General Motors. Thanks for your continued commitment to Detroit.
Thank you, Paul W. It's really an exciting.
Stream us at WJR.com or the WJR app. And if you did not hear our conversation with Mr. Jim Fitterling, the chairman and CEO of Dow, I hope you'll go back to the podcast, which you also can find now at WJR.com or on the WJR app. Listen to the whole show again or for the first time. And certainly for the interview that we had with Jim Fitterling. And he's been great here. They're getting ready to wrap up. People are starting to come out of the meeting here where Mr. Fitterling has been the guest speaker, the guest of honor today, if you will. And boy, he's got a lot going on at Dow and so many great things that he has brought to Midland. And for that matter, to golf, too, the LPGA, which they're now going to be calling the Dow Championship. And WJR will be there coming up in June. But more on that later. I just heard Janina Jacobs' name on the radio. That's a great blast from the past. And she's going to be there for the Spin on Golf Sunday at 6 p.m. That's great. She's wonderful, and I haven't heard her name or heard from Janina Jacobs in a while. That's nice to hear. Speaking of nice to hear, it's nice to hear that John Walsh is with us. He's the president and CEO of the Michigan Manufacturers Association, MMA, and he's been here enjoying this luncheon for the Detroit Economic Club. At least I think you've been enjoying it.
I have indeed. It was fantastic.
Well, it looked like it was, and it was a nice crowd enjoying this. How are the manufacturers in Michigan feeling about the economy, John?
People are feeling what I call cautiously optimistic for the year. Orders are up. There's some stability in the supply chain, which we've been lacking for a couple of years following COVID. A little bit of nervousness with, you've got the world stage, a lot of things going on. We have an election year. Regardless of where you stand, there's always some instability there. But when I meet with members, small and large, they're feeling pretty good about the year.
We have certainly all seen and heard and read about the OEMs pulling back a bit on the EV projections. And frankly, listening to the people who want to buy the cars. They're telling them what they want. They like the hybrids. They don't like the entire EV electric vehicle, in at least the way it is right now. So have any of those decisions impacted your supplier base at this point?
It has. So it's understandable. First and foremost, I was at a breakfast this morning that Bill Ford spoke at the Breakfast Club, and he talked about some of the changes that they're making, and they're logical. They make sense. There's a plan for the future. Where it pinches the supply chain a bit is for those that were starting to make investments to prepare for the EV future. It's a little more difficult now to sustain perhaps the loans that they took on to buy new equipment.
Yeah, thought of when all of a sudden the government says, oh, maybe we're backing off. I thought, how'd you like to be Mary Barra waking up after billions of dollars doing what they said they needed us to do?
And here's the deal. It's not just the federal dollars. There are billions upon billions upon billions in private sector money.
Oh, I know. That's what I'm talking about. Talking about the money that General Motors, yeah, that Ford, that Ford has been the brightest about this. I said it at the time. They were keeping an ICE, an internal combustion engine component. Mm-hmm. And I bet when they first announced that, some people said, which component are you working for, the internal combustion or the EVs? And the people who were going to EVs probably thought they were the special blessed people, and the people with ICE are going, oh, boy, I'm still with the internal combustion engine. Well, who's having the last laugh? The internal combustion engine people.
Well, those conversations actually did happen and still are happening as people try to think about what the future is. We're going to see EV vehicles. It's coming. The investment is great. The technology is improving. People are coming to understand them better. But those companies that made a decision to keep one foot in the internal combustion world while expanding or looking at the hybrids, they're going to be the most successful.
And I think we're seeing that.
Absolutely.
Right now. Now, tell me a little bit about what you would say your mission is for the Manufacturers Association, the Michigan Manufacturers Association. I know it's to empower, to inspire, and to support.
Absolutely. So I like to say we block and tackle. That's our job. We try to remove public policy impediments, regulatory impediments, and or get laws and regulations passed that help us move forward. In turn, we also help provide services to our smaller members. We have 2,000 members, 67% are smaller than 100 employees. They need our help to bring health insurance with Blue Cross or MetLife products to come into bear, as well as consulting services. And then we've made a massive investment in workforce development. That is the number one issue for all of our members, small and large. We're spending a lot of time on making sure we have a pipeline for the future.
Well, you have been a champion for the manufacturing community in Michigan. You have a proven track record. So I would presume it's not too difficult, and we have 2,000 members, it's not too difficult to become a member.
No, we try to keep it easy, and it's based on a member size in terms of employees. We make an argument of whether it's government affairs, workforce solutions, or services. People join for very different reasons, but they benefit from everything we do.
How do people get more information?
So they can go to our website, which is www.mimfg.org.
MIMFG. Michigan Manufacturing, MIMFG.org. All right. Always a pleasure, John. Keep in touch with us, will you? Let us know what's going on. And if any time we can be of help to you or your members of the Michigan Manufacturers Association, you know you merely have to let us know.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate that.
The president and CEO of MMA, Michigan Manufacturing Association, Mr. John Walsh, as we continue here on News Talk 760 WJR. And we're going to close out with a guy we spoke with yesterday. That's how much we love him. But this time it's in person. And people say, you know, Daniel House is the only guy that calls you Dub. And you know what? He's the only guy who's allowed to call me Dub. Because some people think you're saying dumb. But you're saying Dub, like in W. Just thought I'd make that clear as we continue in focus on WJR. Winter can do funny things to your roof. The ice, the snow, the freezing, the thawing. It can all cause your shingles to become brittle and crack, which can lead to major roofing problems if not caught early. I am so looking forward to seeing Victor of Victor's Home Solutions. I'm going to be with him tomorrow. We're going to do some wonderful television commercials together. I believe in this guy and everybody who uses him. A guy in the lobby here today said, I just hired Victor. So far, they seem pretty good. And I said, I wouldn't say they're pretty good if I didn't think they were pretty good. They're real good. And the best advice I can give you is to call Victor's Home Solutions now and schedule an appointment free for a spring roof inspection. I say now because their calendar is going to get filled up as the weather gets warmer. Schedule your appointment before the rush. Get peace of mind knowing your roof is ready to handle the spring rains and have a plan if it isn't. If your roof has any problems, the spring thunderstorms will find them. You want to get any roof issues taken care of before it's too late and your home suffers significant water damage. When you call Victor's Home Solutions, you are taking the guesswork out of choosing the right roofing contractor. Such an important decision, choosing the wrong roofer can be a disaster. Victor's has more five-star reviews than any other roofer in Michigan. They offer a 50-year leak-free guarantee on every roof they install. You know, Victor's did a replacement for me on our roof, did a great job. So good. In fact, I hired them again to do a brand new roof on a brand new structure. So impressed with their customer service, their workmanship. They were there when they said they would be there. They cleaned up magnificently when they were done. It's all a great experience, and that's not always the case with a roofer. I want you to call Victor's Home Solutions today at 734-666-6914. That's 734-666-6914. Or you can book an appointment online simply at victors.com. 145, Daniel Howes, coming up on WJR. Well, we close out what I hope has been, for you, a good show here. We always enjoy being invited by Steve Gregorian, the Detroit Economic Club. WJR, the only people that are invited to broadcast from this. And a great luncheon at the Motor City Casino featuring Jim Fitterling, the chairman and CEO of Dow. Don't take it from me, though. Take it from a guy we know and trust very, very much, Daniel Howes, senior editor, business columnist for the Detroit News. You sat in there. I've heard Jim Fitterling talk a number of times, but I wasn't there today. I presume he did the usual excellent job.
Yeah, he did. I moderated a conversation with him, and we had a pretty wide ranging talk about energy, carbonization, a little bit about politics, but more as how public policy intersects with the business.
That advanced nuclear reactor project in Texas, the small modular reactors, that's huge.
It's huge, and it's little and huge apparently. But
yeah.
It doesn't have the same risk profile as he explains it, but it's fairly new, it sounds like. What I found interesting was, I'm sure I'll butcher this, but they produce like 10 gigawatts of power a day, which is on a scale with the DTE Energy.
Really?
I mean, you don't think, at least I don't, you know, you think of Dow Chemical, that's what you think, right? But they're producing enormous amounts of energy that they consume and use for their processes in production to build chemicals and other processes.
And as he has explained, I'm sure, to this crowd and to us earlier and a few months ago when he first brought this up to us, it's really safe. It's like walk away safe. If something goes wrong, it just shuts down. And let's face it, anything that has nuclear in the name worries people. And we have to kind of get over that.
Well, yeah, and there are countries all over the world. I mean, France gets France about 60% of its power from nuke, at least I think, least that. You know, they use it in Ukraine. It's a big issue. You know, the Zaporizhia nuclear plant is constantly being raised as a potential. Could there be some kind of catastrophe? And of course, Ukraine is where they why am I drawing a blank?
I don't know, but it doesn't. I mean, don't worry about it.
Chernobyl is where Chernobyl happened. So, I mean,
Ukraine is where Chernobyl happened.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that funny? How many of us can I save showing of hands? No hands go up. I never would have said Ukraine. Oh, you did, Tony? Tony did? Come on, Rieger. You knew it was Ukraine?
I would have said Russia.
I would have said Russia would have been my quick, easy answer, because that's well, how it was part, covered it by was, the
it,
news.
But it was part of the Soviet Union at the time.
Back then it was Russia.
So that and credited with hastening the downfall of Gorbachev and the Soviets.
Well, there you are. So as the moderator, Daniel Howes of the Detroit News, you came to this opportunity, and it's quite an honor that they chose you. Was there something that you had in your back pocket that you couldn't wait to spring on him?
Yes and no. I was interested as a Michigan CEO what his view was on Michigan's competitiveness, what he would want to change if he could, wave a wand and change policy.
Anything stand out in your mind?
Well, not really, although I thought it was really interesting. It got me excited because of something else we're working on at the Detroit News, when he talked about immigration policy. And he talked about it in the context of being able to attract talent. And there's this assumption by a lot of anti-immigration folks that this country can produce all of the talent it needs for its economy. And the fact of the matter is that's just flat not true. And the harder you make it, and it's interesting, the people that are really keying in on our problems from a policy perspective are the Canadians, because they're right next door. And they are one of the biggest competitive threats to us for talent, say in the auto space and in the tech space. And they are poaching talent a lot.
Daniel, am I missing out? Are there a bunch of people in this country who do not understand the importance of legal immigrants to our country?
Well, listen to some of the rhetoric, and I mean, you had a very far-reaching immigration bill that made it to the Senate and eventually died. And a lot of folks believe that it was because of partisan politics driven by former President Trump. That seems to be exactly what happened, and had they made some they were going to have to make some progress on this, and we're not making progress on it. And the next administration, whoever it is, if they ignore it, they ignore it at their peril and our peril here in Michigan and places where we need advanced technical talent.
Tell me what fellow Worcester College graduate, like her dad, your daughter Isabel, what's Isabel up to?
She's a manager of international government affairs at Ford.
Wow.
And is doing a lot of very interesting things and running and helping work on the geopolitical risk team and other things. So she's very – and she's also, you'll be happy to know, as a Wolverine, she's in an MBA program in Michigan.
Oh, good. I'm very happy to know. But I was thrilled that she was following in your footsteps at Worcester. And Marguerite, her mom, and your lovely wife, I haven't seen her in a long time.
She's doing well, hanging in there, staying very active, working a lot, and all's well.
Good. Always good to see you, my friend. Always especially good to actually see you.
Yes, and I feel the same way.
All right.
All right, Dub.
There it is. And it's Dub, D-U-B.
D-U-B, as in Paul W.
Why does Daniel Howes call you Dumb?
Not Dumb, well, Dub, as in Paul W.
Thank you. Daniel Howes, senior editor, business columnist, Detroit News, and he was called upon with quite an honor to handle the duties today. We got to go. Thanks to the whole team. I wish I could say it all. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Regards, Paul W. Smith.